Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Clark County Appellant versus Sioux Equipment Corporation, Appalachia. For the Appellant Clark County, we have Ms. Naomi Cromwell, an attorney from Pierre, and Ms. Judith Grunewald, attorney from Pierre. Ms. Grunewald, I understand you'll be doing the arguing this morning. Okay. And for Sioux Equipment, we have Mr. Arthur Hopper, an attorney from Watertown. And for Eaton, I guess I failed to know, that is also an appellee here. Mr. Robert Anderson, an attorney from Pierre. Mr. Hopper, I understand you'll be going first and speak for 16 minutes.
Correct.
And then Mr. Anderson, you'll have 4 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then Mr. Parsons, you represent Snap-Tite, and I understand you're just here to observe. Okay. Very well. With that, then, Ms. Grunewald, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Judith K. Grunewald, and I represent the South Dakota Petroleum Release Compensation Fund, and am speaking on behalf of co-appellant Clark County today. There are two issues before this court, both of first impression. The first is whether installation of an above-ground storage tank and piping system constitutes an improvement to real property so as to implicate the statute of repose. The second is, if the statute of repose is implicated, then is it preempted by CERCLA? We respectfully request this honorable court to reverse the judgment of the trial court for reasons set forth in our brief. Today I will address 3 points which support our position. The first is that it's a question of fact as to whether the tank sewer equipment installed constitutes an improvement of real property as contemplated by the statute of repose, SDCL 15-2A3. The second is that getting by the question of fact, an analysis of the Vandenhall factors demonstrates the petroleum storage equipment does not constitute an improvement to real property. And third, even if the statute of repose is implicated, then it is preempted by CERCLA because CERCLA is a remedial statute and must be construed liberally to effectuate its purpose. We rely on our brief for other arguments. This case arose when 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel leaked into the ground at the Clark County Highway Shop. It leaked because of a faulty flex connector which collapsed, and that flex connector was installed by Sioux Equipment. The PRCF and Clark County have incurred significant remediation costs. The record is sparse in this case because discovery had only just begun when Sioux Equipment moved for summary judgment. On its motion for summary judgment, Sioux Equipment submitted only the complaint as an exhibit. Clark County and PRCF responded and submitted the scope of work as submitted by Dale Peltier to the Department of Environment and Natural Resources, and then Sioux Equipment replied and submitted the affidavit of Dale Peltier. Sioux Equipment mentioned the Vandenhall factors, yet did not analyze the Vandenhall factors, and therefore plaintiffs did not analyze the Vandenhall factors in the trial below either. What we did was set forth the question of fact, and that is one of the Vandenhall factors is whether the storage system is a replacement or repair of prior existing tanks. Despite the submission of the scope of work and Peltier's own affidavit, which confirms that the scope of work states that existing tanks and pump to be removed under separate contract, the trial court granted summary judgment based on the Vandenhall factors, indicating that there was no evidence that the work performed by Sioux Equipment was in any way in the capacity of a replacement. Then, in the absence of any additional evidence, it concluded that the system amounted to an improvement of plaintiff's existing property. The facts in this case, as I indicated, are sparse. In November of 1991, Dale Peltier of Sioux Equipment submitted a permit application to the Department of DENR and indicating that existing tanks and pump to be removed and disposed of under separate contract and indicated the location of proposed tanks. Between November 91 and January of 1992, Sioux Equipment did install the equipment. This was a containment system, above ground storage tanks, with containment piping going through the dike wall. It was not supposed to leak, but the weakest link was buried underground where it couldn't be inspected. And when it collapsed, because we allege of an inordinate amount of vacuum pressure, 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel suddenly released into the environment. The work, as I indicated, was completed in January of 1992. In 2003 is when Clark County discovered it was missing 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel.
Well, if the 10-year statute doesn't apply, what does apply?
What does apply is the Vandenhall factors.
Well, but there's got to be a statute of limitations out there somewhere. Or is it going to infinity?
Well, I think we need to look at the purpose of the statute of repose and look at the cause of action that we brought. This is a governmental entity that is trying to recoup costs for remediation of the environment. And your question was, does this liability go on to infinity? I suggest at this time, under CERCLA, it does, because of the importance of trying to clean up the environment and not putting the payment back on the taxpayers to clean up after somebody else's negligence. The statute of repose contemplates that there was a design and instruction of this system, and Sioux Equipment's answer, they denied that they constructed or designed anything. They indicated that they supplied the tanks, installed the tanks. And while the question of whether it goes on infinity is an excellent one, I think each case should be determined on the facts and apply the Vandenhall factors. I think one of the important things is that many of these components are warranted for 25 to 30 years, and to apply the statute of repose for remediating under these faulty equipment then eviscerates any type of warranty and any it denies the state the ability to protect its environment and put the cost of the remediation back on the tortfeasor. So in the complaint, we had alleged that Sioux Equipment had installed and designed, and Sioux Equipment in its answer denied that it did, and this alone creates a question of fact. The trial court granted Sioux Equipment's summary judgment and found that the statute of repose precludes Clark County. In addition, if the legislature thought it was important to put a statute of limitations for remediation, the legislature could have done so in SDCL 34A 13.9.2, or whatever this independent statutory obligation and right for PRCF to recover remediation costs, but it did not. In addition, the PRCF statute is more recent and it's more specific than the statute of repose, which was enacted in 1986. The PRCF cost recovery statute was enacted in 1990. Sioux Equipment failed at the trial court to meet its burden to prove that no genuine issues of material fact exist whether the installation of the storage equipment constitutes an improvement to real property. Under the Vandenhoef factors, one of the factors is whether it's a repair or it's a replacement. And not only does the scope of work, but also Dale Peltier's own affidavit indicate that it was a replacement. Their argument that they did not themselves replace the tanks does not prevail. Sioux Equipment attempts repeatedly to switch the burden to plaintiffs. We met our burden. We showed that there was a question of fact with regard to whether the tanks were a replacement or not. They brought back Dale Peltier's affidavit, but that affidavit did not refute the fact that existing tanks were to be removed under separate contract. He just said he was unaware of what was at the site previously.
Isn't it really, though, a question of law? There's no argument when the tank's installed. There's no argument when it leaks. There's no argument what it was or what caused it. So if you're looking at the statute of limitations, aren't all those significant material facts contested?
I apologize for interrupting.
It's fine.
You mentioned the statute of limitations, and this is the statute of repose, and it was specifically meant to protect those who construct and design certain improvements to real estate. And even though it is a question of law, it relies on the facts. And this, the question of fact of whether or not it replaced existing tanks, was not answered in the trial court.
But the point is, the Chief Justice's point, I think, is there's no dispute about the fact there were tanks there before. They came out under a separate contract. New tanks were installed. Is there a dispute about that?
I do not think there's a dispute about that.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then isn't it a question of law as to whether or not, under those facts, this constitutes an improvement to real estate?
Yes, and we would submit that the correct law to apply is the Vandenhoef case, not the Dakota Harvester case. And as long as you stated that it's a fact that the existing tanks were replaced by those installed by Sioux Equipment, then it is a question of law. Where the trial court was mistaken is that it found that there was no evidence that supported that it was a replacement of any kind. And we would submit that, as Your Honor has noted, is that it was a replacement, and therefore it is a question of law.
Well, can it be an improvement even if it is a replacement of some type? I don't see that the Vandenhoef factors, that any one of them controls over the others. Don't you look at all of them?
I think you do look at all of them. And when you look at all the Vandenhoef factors, the only factors that apply or that there were for which there was evidence submitted was it a repair or placement, and the value. There are five Vandenhoef factors, and if you take the our concession that they did expend money or labor, and then you take the fact that it was a replacement, you have opposite factors. And there, so you have three more factors to consider, and there was no evidence that it made the property more useful. There was no evidence that it added value to the property, and there's no evidence that it was permanent in nature. The Vandenhoef court applied the common sense test. And I would submit to you that when you're applying the common sense test, that you have to rely on facts and you have to rely on evidence. Common sense does not replace the requisite evidence. If you have the evidence, then you can apply your common sense to the evidence. But when there's no evidence, Sioux Equipment has not met its burden to prove that, as a question of law, the installation of the new tanks was an improvement to real property.
Well, the New Mexico Supreme Court ruled that a replacement of a similar type system, it really didn't matter. That it was still an improvement to real property. How would you distinguish that?
I would distinguish the Delgadillo versus City of Socorro case by showing you, or by indicating, that in Delgadillo, it was not a replacement. That's what the difference was. These were a relocation of the lines. It was not a replacement. Things changed. The factors that the Delgadillo court determined or applied were enhanced value of real property, permanent addition, which enhances capital value, involves expenditure of money, and it made the property more useful and specifically distinguished from repair. It did not address the replacement, which I would submit that the Vandenhall court indicates that it should. Even if this court were to find that the statute of repose is implicated because the equipment that Sioux Equipment installed is an improvement to real property, I would submit to you that CERCLA preempts the statute of repose. And the case that appellees cite is the Burlington Northern case versus Poole. And it's interesting looking at the Poole case, and I had to read that several times and only finally just got it last night. The Poole case purports to look at the plain language of CERCLA, but it does not. It focuses, it is a very clever use by a skillful writer of use of quotations, and it makes the quotation from CERCLA read that that is only the statute of limitations which is preempted. What CERCLA actually reads is, if the applicable limitations period for the action parent as specified in the state statute of limitations or under common law and parent provides a commencement date which is earlier than the federally required commencement date, such period shall commence at the federally required commencement date. In effect, it creates a federal discovery rule. When Congress adopted the federal discovery rule, the conference committee specifically cited that they were enacting CERCLA because certain state statutes deprive plaintiffs of their day in court, and especially under the environmental context where there were latent diseases and latent defects take years to discover. And CERCLA was specifically enacted so that it would provide efficient and expedient response to an environmental tragedy, and it would shift those costs of the environmental response from taxpayers to the parties who did the cause. And in this case, it is very applicable because we have two governmental agencies, Clark County and the PRCF, which have expended significant amount of funds, and CERCLA comes in and shifts the cost from the taxpayers as it was intended to the person who did the harm, which we submit is Sioux Equipment. The statute of repose must not apply to environmental remediation statutes because doing so frustrates the purpose of CERCLA and environmental wellness, and gives no relief for the injured or the damaged.
You know, on that point, it seems to me that what we have here is a conflict between canons of construction, one being plain text, what does the text say in the Act, and the other being, what did Congress intend? And even though Congress may have intended what you suggest here, Didn't the Burlington Northern case essentially say it doesn't matter, the text of the act only applies to statutes of limitations?
You're correct, and the Burlington Northern case did say that, that the text doesn't matter, but other cases that we've cited in our brief indicate that when there's a remedial statute, it is congressional intent. You look beyond the plain language in the statute, and I would submit to you that the plain language mentions not just statute of limitations. The broad language before the print talks about applications of limitations. And the whole issue is when that limitations period begins. And what CERCLA is saying, if there's any environmental case that fits under CERCLA, then the limiting time, which in this case is the statute of repose, begins when the plaintiff discovered the damages. And in this case, it was February of 2003. There's a reason that common law is included in CERCLA. I think this court has said it many times, that there are no surplus words that are used. They're there for a meaning. And in fact, in this court, the statute of repose derives from a common law rule of repose. Just because South Dakota enacted the statute of repose does not take it outside the realm of the statute of CERCLA preemption. And we would kindly ask that you reverse the trial court and find that it is a question of fact whether or not the tanks replaced the existing, and that the statute of repose is not implicated, but if it is, then that CERCLA preempts it.
Thank you, Ms. Grunewald.
Thank you.
Even if you win on the statute of repose matter, the preemption, based on the Peltier affidavit that says the solenoid valve that is subject to this litigation upon further inspection and research was a valve that was not sold by Sioux Equipment and was not the valve that was installed with the original work in 1991, Clark County obviously secured the valve from some other supplier and service company, which likely did the maintenance and repair work for Clark County during those years. Doesn't that stop you dead center?
Thank you for the question, Justice Sabers, and it does not. Mr. Peltier's affidavit arrived in my possession when I was checking out of my hotel to go to oral argument and for summary judgment. We did not have a chance to respond. It was not attached to their motion for summary judgment. And in fact, one of the pieces of evidence that I submitted with our response was a letter from DENR in 1991 authorizing Sioux Equipment to not use the Tokium valve but to use a replacement valve. And so if we were given the opportunity to perform...
So that remains to be resolved yet?
It does.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grunewald. Mr. Hopper, you have 16 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Chief Justice Gilbertson. May it please the Court. My name is Arthur Hopper. It's my privilege today to appear before you representing Sioux Equipment, one of the appellees, and to argue in support of Sioux Equipment and the other appellees as well. At the risk of being too basic and covering things that perhaps were past, let me just emphasize that the big picture here is the application of SDCL 15-2A-3, which is the 10-year statute of repose. That statute bars claims brought more than 10 years following substantial completion of construction of an improvement to real estate. The facts in this case are that Sioux Equipment completed this construction at the end of 1991. The summons and complaint were served in this case on February 14 of 2006, so there were more than 14 years that passed from substantial completion to the service of the summons and complaint and initiation of this action. Briefly, there's a reference in one of the in one of the briefs to an issue about control. There is a statute. The next section of that statute says that the bar does not apply to somebody who's in control of the premises or control of the equipment or construction. In this case, SUI equipment was not in control. They were at the site one time in 12 years when they were called by Clark County, but there was no ongoing obligation to maintain or inspect or any of that. One other point that just quickly, there are references to in the briefs to the amount of the damage and fault and the cause of the damage. Again, the issue here is the applicability of the statute of repose, and those factors are just not relevant. As it relates to the subject of the burden of proof and the procedure for the summary judgment motion, there is no dispute about the facts that are in this record. The fact is that SUI equipment was called to construct this fuel storage and dispensing system on Clark County's property. They did that. The record, the scope of work document, shows the nature of the work that was done. Three 10,000-gallon storage tanks, two of them were diesel fuel, one of them was gasoline, connected with pipes and valves and vents and those things necessary to get the fuel from the tanks to the dispensing pump so that Clark County could use the fuel. Part of that went through a containment dike. It went down underground. The decision about what was in the project is set out in the scope of work, and that was all done by SUI equipment. The PRCF and Clark County focus on what might have been at the site before SUI equipment came there and did its work. And the focus for that, or the reason for that, is their suggestion that there really was no improvement to real estate as because there was something there before. That something there is not in the record. And in the appellant's brief, they suggest that, that those facts should be inferred.
Are these tanks above ground?
They are above ground, Your Honor.
Okay, so they're just sitting on the ground?
Correct.
They're not embedded in the ground of the...
Well, to the extent that above-ground storage tanks sit on concrete, that's correct.
Okay. But they're not connected to the concrete, and the concrete's not connected to the ground in the sense of any major connection like that?
I guess I don't know the answer to that. We haven't gotten far enough into the case to know the answer to that. We know that each tank stores 10,000 gallons of fuel, so we know that it's going to be pretty substantial, and it's going to...
But the size of it doesn't make it a realty improvement. What in your mind, what makes it a realty improvement?
All of those Vandenhall factors, when analyzed, make it an improvement to real property. The fact that they are substantial, it does make it less temporary, more permanent, which is one of the factors. They are attached to piping that goes underground, and it goes through a containment dike. So all of that is attached to the real property. The piping underneath is obviously attached. All of that was work that was done by SUI equipment.
My understanding is there was only one pipe that ran under this berm to the equipment that distributed it. Is that right, or are there more pipes than one?
I would say there has to be three pipes because you've got two diesel fuel tanks and a gasoline tank, and they're not all going to go through the same pipe. That's my understanding of that.
Follow up on the point that you started to make about there being nothing in the record about what was there before. Is that what you were going to say? There's nothing in the summary judgment record that there were tanks there before.
The only thing in the record is this scope of work document that Dale Peltier and SUI equipment provided, which starts out by saying existing tanks and pump to be removed under a separate contract. The meaning of that from SUI equipment standpoint is that's not anything that they were doing. That just means that our job is not to have anything to do with that. But that's the only thing in the record that says that what may have been there. We don't know what that means. We don't know whether that means that there were two tanks there. It's plural, so presumably more than one. Well, we don't know whether that means that there were two tanks there, whether they were 500-gallon tanks or 1,000-gallon tanks. We don't know whether they were diesel fuel tanks or gasoline tanks. And our position is that the burden of proof as it comes to the summary judgment motion is that the obligation to present those specific facts falls on the non-moving party in this case. Sioux Equipment has presented by affidavit and otherwise, as the cases say, the information and the evidence necessary to establish that there is no dispute as to the facts in the record and that Sioux Equipment is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Having done that, if it's true then that there are other facts that go beyond the record to show that there was something there which meant that it really wasn't an improvement to real estate, it didn't really enhance the use of the property, it didn't really add value to the property, that burden falls on the non-moving party to present those specific facts. And we've described several cases that have held that in our brief. With respect to the matter of whether there was an improvement to real property, the trial court found that there was. The facts are in the scope of work and Dale Peltier's affidavit, and again, those are set out. Basically, Sioux Equipment was called on to design and construct this project. There is a question about design, and the allegation in the plaintiff's verified complaint that Sioux Equipment was called upon to design this project. And it's true that in our answer we denied that for one small reason, and that reason is that the scope of work describes the type of piping and the location of piping and the tanks and all of that, and it makes a specific reference to one type of check valve that Sioux Equipment proposed to use. The Department of Environment and Natural Resources came back and said, no, we don't like that particular brand of valve. We want something else. So from the standpoint of the allegation that we designed this entire system, we couldn't say yes, we did, because there was this small component that we didn't. That was not ours. But everything else was, and we acknowledge that. And for purposes of this motion, we acknowledge that we designed this system. And we'd submit that the non-moving party, PRCF and Clark County, are bound by the language of their verified complaint, which is, in fact, that at several places in the complaint, that this system was designed by Sioux Equipment. Without knowing anything about what may have been there before, then the question is, was there an improvement to real property? The Vandenhall factors have been discussed. The first one is, was the use of the property enhanced? From Sioux Equipment standpoint, they came to a site where there was nothing there. If focusing on their work and their construction, they put this system onto this property so that Clark County could use the property for their county shop. To go from bare land and no system to a system that can dispense fuel for their equipment, certainly the use of this property by Clark County was enhanced. The other thing is to focus on the language of the statute of repose itself. The question might be, well, but maybe there was something there before Sioux Equipment got involved. The focus of the statute of repose is the construction that was done that gave rise to the cause of action. The construction that gave rise to the cause of action in this case is the work that Sioux Equipment did. Focusing on Sioux Equipment's work, there was certainly an enhancement, and nothing about what existed before would be relevant to whether Sioux Equipment's work enhanced the use of this property. If it didn't, why would Clark County do it? The second factor, did it involve the expenditure of labor and money? That's conceded. It cost $15,000 to put it in. The third element is factor to be considered is whether this was a mere repair or replacement. And there's been a lot of discussion in the briefs about that. Sioux Equipment isn't trying to back away from their scope of work in this case by Dale Peltier's affidavit. We know, and Dale Peltier knew when he did the scope of work, that there were existing tanks and a pump there. But in his affidavit, he said, I didn't know We, Sioux Equipment, didn't know anything about the nature of that equipment. In other words, those things like the size of the tanks and the size of the pipes to regulate the flow and how many tanks there were and what type of fuel could be stored in those tanks. We know what Sioux Equipment did here. We just don't know anything about, from this record, what existed before. And the record supports the summary judgment motion. With respect to this issue about the design of the system, if the contention from the PRCF and Clark County is that this was merely a replacement, why would there need to be design allegations? If Sioux Equipment only repaired something and or replaced something, you wouldn't need to design that. You just go take out what was there and you put something right back in. To involve design means something more than merely replacing something that was already there. Fourth factor, did Sioux Equipment's work add value to the property? Certainly. If there's no system, and then you have a system that can dispense and store fuel, that property is more valuable than it was before. And then the fifth factor is whether that's permanent. And to the extent that anything can be permanent, the intent of the parties was that the system would be there, it would stay there. Presumably, it's still there to this day. The Harvest Store case, since the South Dakota Supreme Court has never addressed the issue of what constitutes an improvement to real property under this statute of repose, we look to other cases that have dealt with an improvement to real property. The Dakota Harvest Store case is a case like that where the issue was whether excise contractors' excise tax was owed based on the construction and lease of large Harvest Store silos. And the Supreme Court had to decide what was an improvement to real property under those circumstances. The court listed several factors and ultimately said that it's the objective intent of the parties that determines, and then said that the physical facts are to be considered, particularly whether the article placed on the land is designed to promote the use to which the property has been put. And that exactly describes Sioux Equipment's work and this construction in this case. The system was exactly designed to promote the use of the property for which the system was put in place, that being to provide fuel for the county equipment.
You better talk about preemption before your time runs out. Let me ask you this. How would you respond? I guess, how do you respond to their argument on that, especially when it appears that the congressional intent was to try to extend these statutes or these limitation periods? Maybe they didn't get it done under the language, but it certainly appears that's what they were trying to do.
Justice Zinner, if I may, Mr. Anderson is going to address those issues.
Thank you.
So, in the few minutes that I've got left then, I guess the last thing that I would say about the issue as it relates to the statute of repose and the question about an improvement to real estate, the one case that was cited by the appellants in their brief is the Binnick case, and that was a case where there were some fuel tanks that were in the ground, and a contractor called Stem Brothers was asked to remove those tanks and replace them with some other tanks. And the court ultimately held that that was a mere replacement. It wasn't an improvement to real estate. We would ask that the court consider what was done in that case and what was done in this case. And in Binnick, it said, the court views such conduct, the replacement of those tanks, as distinguishable from the design of the entire system of gasoline delivery, which might have been considered an improvement to, in this case, the gas station. So, in other words, that's exactly what we have here. The court distinguished that case where it said that the sale of mass-produced items does not constitute design, planning, and supervision, as was the case here with Sioux Equipment. Unless there are other questions, I'm out of time, and I'm going to defer to Mr. Anderson from this point.
Thank you, Mr. Hopper. Mr. Anderson, you have 4 minutes, sir. Apparently, you're going to tell us about preemption.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Rob Anderson, if it pleases the court and counsel, and I'm here representing third-party defendant Eaton Corporation on behalf of Mr. Parsons, who represents third-party defendant Snaptite. I can tell you that Eaton and Snaptite support the arguments made by Mr. Hopper, in both here in court and in his brief, and we ask this court to affirm the trial court in all respects. It's my intent to talk about the CERCLA preemption issue. And I think before I get to the question that has been addressed about plain language versus legislative intent, I think it's important to look at the history of the courts that have addressed this issue. The highest federal court in the land, which has addressed this issue, which was created by federal legislation, and they did so, by the way, in a factual setting extremely similar to this case. That's the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Burlington Northern v. Poole. That case analyzed the statutes that we've been talking about here in terms of CERCLA preemption of state statutes of limitations. And as the court knows from prior discussion here today, the decision of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the only court of appeals which has addressed that issue, was that we need to look at the language of the statute, and that's what they did. And they found that because the language talked about preempting statutes of limitations but not statutes of repose, that a statute of repose should be enforced according to the state law that governs those statutes. Now, you can talk about what the congressional intent was, and when you do that with any act, there's some inherent speculation in that. And not just in this case, but in any case where a court, trial court or an appellate court, is called on to analyze and determine what a body meant when they passed a statute. And what they meant is presumably what they said. And that's what gives rise to the general rule that the plain language of the statute should take precedence over the intent of the body that passed it. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Burlington Northern v. Poole conducted that type of an analysis. And as noted by the appellants in their brief, there's a split of authority on this issue. But here's the history behind the split of authority. The only federal court of appeals to address the issue has found in favor of the position taken by the appellee in this case. The most recent district court, the court in German v. Chessie System CSX in Alabama, in the Alabama District Court, did the same thing. And this isn't atypical of a situation where in the formative years of any statutory enactment, sometimes courts construe things and later courts take a look at it and say, hey, you really missed something here. And if you look at the Bugsy decision relied on heavily by the appellants here, the court in Burlington Northern v. Poole and the court in the German case in Alabama did exactly that. They said these early cases didn't distinguish between a statute of limitations and a statute of repose, which are two different animals. There's a good analysis of that in the Poole case. In the Poole case, the Fifth Circuit addressed and defined or discussed a statute of repose in very much the same way this court did in the Peterson v. Burns case, admittedly a different setting, but the issue was, what's a statute of repose? Well, the early cases, such as Bugsy, didn't even discuss that. And in the Fifth Circuit made that plain and basically in their footnote said, Bugsy made a mistake. That's what we think. No other court of appeals has found differently. And the logic and the analysis of the court in the Poole case is very compelling, and I think should persuade this court to find that the trial court acted appropriately when it held that there was no CERCLA preemption of the South Dakota statute of repose in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Grunewald, you have 10 minutes.
As is human nature, Sioux Equipment wants its cake and wants to eat it too. When we alleged that they designed the system, and in particular, the design was that they selected the incorrect flex connector, which couldn't withstand that negative vacuum pressure, they denied it in their answer. It is only now that if they didn't design or they didn't construct anything, that the statute of repose doesn't apply, that they are now willing to admit, yeah, we designed the system. And in Dale Peltier's affidavit, he indicates that they didn't excavate anything. What they did was they installed petroleum equipment. The Bennett case, which we mentioned in our brief, in which Mr. Hopper discussed, is very similar to this one because there are two independent alternative holdings of the Beniac case, and they are right on point with this one. First is that the Stem brothers did not design the system, and therefore the statute of repose did not apply because they were mere vendors, suppliers, and installers of a mass-produced equipment system. Here, Sioux Equipment denied they designed anything. They installed equipment. The second independent holding, separate from the first, is that applying all the Vandenhall factors, the storage equipment at issue in Biniac, which was underground tanks, not even above ground tanks like these, and those tanks have been gone for a year and a half, that court, the Biniac court, found that every single Vandenhall factor weighed in favor of finding that this petroleum storage equipment was not a improvement to real estate, real property.
Why didn't you present more facts to show that what was there before? And you really gave the court nothing to go on to determine whether it was a repair or an improvement because you didn't provide them with any information on what had been there before or if there was anything in there.
Thank you, Justice Meyer-Henry. And our brief was in response to their brief, which only attached the complaint. We submitted Dale Peltier's own scope of work. We thought there was no better evidence to show that it replaced the tanks than Sioux Equipment's own scope of work that shows that was done there. Had I had Dale Peltier's affidavit prior, you know, to right before oral argument, indicating that he didn't know what was there, I would have provided with the court what was there, but I did not have the opportunity.
Rule 56 gives you a chance to supplement if you don't have an opportunity to present facts at the summary judgment hearing. The rule clearly provides that you have the opportunity to ask the court for additional time to do that.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believed at the time, and I still believe today, that plaintiffs did not have the burden of showing what specific equipment was there. We brought forth our evidence that showed that it was a replacement, that there were existing tanks there before, and therefore Sioux Equipment did not refute that, and we were surprised that the trial court found that there was no evidence whatsoever that it was a replacement. The Burlington Northern case, switching over to the CERCLA argument, the Burlington Northern case, actually, whether it was intentional or it was accidental, does not frustrate CERCLA, as odd as that is, because first, the statute of repose in that case was a products liability case. It was not applying the construction or the design statute of repose that we are and that Bugsy did. It was a products liability case. And what happened in Burlington Northern is Burlington Northern sued Poole, who had these big storage tanks when hundreds of thousands of gallons of chemicals were spilled. And then Poole sued the manufacturer. And it was only with regards to the defendant suing the manufacturer that the statute of repose, which was a products liability case, came about, and therefore it actually did not shift the burden back to the taxpayers. It was Poole that paid for the remediation. Therefore, we would respectfully submit, unless you have any more questions, that this court find that the statute of repose was not implicated in this case, but even if it was, that it was preempted by CERCLA.
Thank you, Mr. Renault. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.